Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome to Overnight America.
Happy Halloween from Overnight America.
What did ever happen to Joe? Maybe Joe is a ghost. Who knows? Clint Hosse in for Ryan Recker. Pleasure to be here. And this hour, we are back to the haunted, ghost, the macabre, the paranormal. And we have some very special guests. Our first guest was born and raised on a farm in central Illinois. He's a graduate from Eastern Illinois University. Got his PhD from the University of New Mexico, Albuquerque, in American history. Professor of history at Southeast Missouri State University in Cape Girardeau from 1969 to 2013. And he taught a variety of courses there, including military history and Civil War, Mississippi River. He is a folklorist. He also did economic history. He's been the director of the Center for Regional History for Southeast Missouri for 25 years, chairman of the Department of History at Southeast for 5 years, and he's now the CEO of the Kellerman Foundation for Historic Preservation in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. We welcome Dr. Frank Nickel to Overnight America on KMOX. Good evening, Doctor. Are you in Cape Girardeau tonight?
I certainly am. I'm here talking to you, and I could be out trick-or-treating.
Well, isn't it a little late for that?
Not for me. I think there may be some possibilities yet later tonight. I'm not sure.
Well, we'll keep that in mind.
Okay.
Thanks so much for joining us. You know, we had Johnny Rabbit on in the 8 o'clock hour, and he talked mostly about local haunted places. But this is something, I'm just kind of curious how you first became interested in all of this.
Well, I became the director of the Center for Regional History here at Southeast. And one of the things that we wanted to do was provide opportunities to study local history. And one of the prevailing themes that always came up in the fall was, what are you going to do about Halloween? Are there ghost tales here? And what we discovered, of course, in talking to people throughout the region, was that there was wide interest in Halloween stories and ghost stories and mysteries. And so we did develop some stories about the mysteries of Cape Girardeau and of Southeast Missouri, ranging from the Mississippi River to suspicious deaths, strange deaths, to some of the original founders of the town. So we found a wide range of interest. We found a wide range of topics. And for a period of time, we put those together. And we had public programs in which we invited people to come in and share their stories. And so we had a variety of responses and a very wide variety of stories.
You know, earlier this evening when Johnny Rabbit was telling his story, I mean, they went on and on and on. And it just made, and then I hear you talk about this with how many stories you had from people. It just makes you really wonder, even if you're not a believer in ghosts or haunted houses, it makes you wonder if there isn't something to it. How do you feel about that? Are you a believer?
I'm not a believer. I don't believe in ghosts. I have never experienced seeing, to my knowledge, a ghost. But I certainly have experienced some events that I cannot explain. And I am aware of Halloween. It's changing rapidly. It's the fastest growing holiday in American history. Right now, it's really evolving, and it's a fairly recent story in America. We didn't do trick-or-treating until the 1930s much, so that's all new, and that's changing a lot. I see a lot of trunk-or-treat events that indicate change happening in Halloween, but it's the second largest holiday in America after Christmas now, as far as costumes and so. I just read in the paper, and maybe the Post-Dispatch, that Americans spent $400 million this year on Halloween costumes for their pets. And I thought, now that is something unusual. That's new, that is different, and it's obviously growing.
That's just the money spent on the pets. I just want to make sure.
On the pets. Costumes for pets.
We were talking about this earlier, that it just seems to be getting more and more popular. As a person that I consider to be a scholar, I mean, why? Where do you see that coming from?
Well, I think that superstition, myth, folklore, all seek solutions to frustrations, to fears, to uncertainty. And all of us want to control nature to some degree. And we are not controlling nature now. And so I think that there's a concern about the loss of control. For a period of time, I think we sort of believed that we were in control of nature, that we could manage it, we could do something about it. But I remember reading a book that just stunned me when I read it. John McPhee, one of the greatest writers in the 20th century, wrote about the control of nature. And he said mankind wants to control nature. And he provided three great examples of places where man has battled nature for control of the environment. And one of them is the lower Mississippi River, where the Atchafalaya is trying to seize control of the Mississippi. A second one is in the efforts in Iceland to redirect the flow of lava away from a town by spraying massive amounts of water on the hot lava. And then the third is the diversion of debris slides from the San Gabriel Mountains in order to protect the city of Los Angeles. And John McPhee says these are mankind's three great efforts to control nature and to do battle with the American environment. And he concludes by saying time is on the side of Mother Nature. So I think maybe our weather patterns, the fires in California that are just astounding, all of the floods and the hurricanes that we have had, have made us a bit more suspicious of our control of nature and made us do a bit more thinking about man's relationship with nature. And I sort of see Halloween as an example of individuals looking to the past to find answers to dilemmas that we can't solve today. And so I think that Halloween is going to steadily increase in popularity until we do something about controlling nature.
It's the best explanation I've ever heard. That's fascinating. What a perspective. That's Dr. Frank Nichol. He's our guest in this first half of the hour. We're talking to Dr. Frank Nichol from his home in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. We're going to take a break on Overnight America, and we'll return. And will you share some scary stories with us?
I will do that. I will try.
Back in a moment on KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America with Clint Hosse and Dr. Frank Nichol, a great educator and now the CEO of the Kellerman Foundation for Historic Preservation in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, about 100 miles down the road from St. Louis. Dr. Nichol, you may have some stories of your own or stories that people have shared with you over the years. Why don't you try to scare us a little bit?
I'm not sure I can frighten you, but I can share some stories, certainly. I'm not a believer in ghosts. I've never seen a ghost. But I used to be a member of the board of directors of the historic Glenn House in Cape Girardeau. And we used to have boring meetings after boring meetings, trying to decide what to do about the gutters of the house, what to do about painting the house, how to maintain funds for it. And one of those meetings back in 1987, we were sitting around the dining room table in that historic home. There must have been about 8 or 10 of us. And we were all sitting there talking about a problem that existed on the floor upstairs. And someone asked a question, well, how much will it cost? And we all sat there. It was very quiet. We all kind of looked at our feet and our shoes. And then, coming down the stairs beside the entrance to the dining room where we were all seated, was the clear evidence of footsteps of a person walking down those stairs. We all turned at the same time and looked to the stairs because there was no one else in the house. But we heard those footsteps. We all stopped. We all looked. And B.W. Harrison, one of the most sophisticated and intelligent men I've ever known, turned to me and said, well, who is that? And we stopped stunned because someone walked down those stairs. I didn't believe in signs like that. I didn't believe in stories like that, but I believe that one. And it was a little bit scary. It was a little bit uncertain. It made us all stop. It made us all think. And since that time, I've become aware that in that house, where I believe 5 children died and had their funerals, in that house, we still have a problem. Around Christmas time, when we decorate the house with Christmas trees and presents, the presents move around. And we'll come in the morning, and the presents will not be where they were the night before. And some of them will be unwrapped. And so there is something happening in that house that we can't explain, that we don't know about, but remains a mystery. I had an experience when I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was a high school teacher and coach in Albuquerque. And we had an international student from Ankara, Turkey. And I had her in class. She was very bright. She was very strong in language. and she lived with an American host family. And one night while she was asleep, it was approximately 1 a.m. in New Mexico time, and this young lady woke up screaming, frightened everyone in the house, and every person in the home testified that they heard those screams, and they were really blood-curdling. It was just upsetting to all of them. And she was screaming, "My father died, my father died." And everyone went to her, and they tried to reassure her, "He's just fine. Young lady, you've just had a bad dream." And the mother got a glass of tea, a cup of tea, and they all sat around and talked a while. There was no telephone call from anyone, but she said, "My father has died. I know he has." And she went back to sleep eventually. But the next morning, in New Mexico time, by American clocks, she did receive a call from Ankara, Turkey, saying that indeed her father had died.
That's incredible.
Now, all of us, doubted that. We said, that couldn't be. How could that be? I don't have an answer for that. But I know from that young lady who I trusted implicitly, who was very bright, who was very articulate, she woke up screaming. There were several witnesses to that, the members of the family, and her father had, in fact, died. How in the world can you explain that?
It's beyond me, but you sure have shared some great stories with us, and we really appreciate you visiting with us tonight, Doctor. And maybe we'll do it again sometime. We appreciate
your... I hope we will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on Overnight America on KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Happy Halloween from Overnight America.
We've heard a lot tonight. The first hour we had Johnny Rabbit. He talked about some haunted places in St. Louis. And then we just heard from Dr. Frank Nickel, who was 100 miles down the road, and some pretty scary things happening in Cape Girardeau in southeast Missouri. He told the story of being out in Albuquerque. Now we're going to really dial it in to Webster Groves. And we welcome to the Voice of St. Louis, Patrick Dorsey. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
We're having the time of our lives here.
Excellent.
How did you come to write the book, Haunted Webster Groves?
So I've always had an interest in hauntings and the supernatural ever since I was a little kid and ran across a book in the library that had true accounts of ghost stories. But what got me started on the project, I go on vacation with my family, and I was talking to my son about possibly doing a haunted walking tour in the city we were headed for, and it got me thinking. You know, Webster's an old area. I wonder if there's any stories around here. So I went out on one of the community boards, and I posted, you know, just a simple request saying I'm working on a project, and I'm interested in interviewing people about any of their experiences with ghosts in their homes or any of the buildings here in Webster Groves. And an hour and a half later, I had 12 hits already. So it was an interesting start to the project.
So what makes Webster so haunted?
I think it's got a lot of history. It's an older area. It's really one of the original suburbs of St. Louis, way back to when it was people taking the train out from the city to get out here, which was the countryside at that point. It was farmland, and I think people were just moving out here. So a lot of the houses and everything have been here a long time. And my sense is that the more history and the more living structures have going on in them, the more that kind of leaves a mark, if that sort of makes sense. And I think that's what leads to a lot of these things being experienced by people later.
We've talked to several experts tonight. Do you believe in ghosts?
I would say I am agnostic and cautiously skeptical. I haven't talked to anybody who I haven't believed that they at least believe what they've experienced, and I can't rule it out myself. I've never had any of these really heavy duty experiences people have where they have a full body apparition or a shadow, you know, appear on the wall of them or anything like that. So I can't speak to that kind of experience, but certainly enough people seem to have it, and enough people have had it just, you know, throughout history that I think there's at least something going on that people are experiencing.
Yeah, we were just talking about that a little bit earlier, that there are so many stories and so many people have experienced this. There's got to be something to it.
Right, right. That's kind of my sense of it as well.
What about, can you speak at all to various properties in Webster Groves that people have told you are haunted, that we may know of just by your description?
So when I wrote the book, I promised to the people when I spoke about their experiences or wrote about their experiences in their homes that I wouldn't reveal anything about that. I give street names, but I try to keep that just because, you know, these days people just don't seem to have the boundaries they used to have. That if I wrote and said, oh, things appear in the windows, I can almost guarantee as soon as that book came out, there'd be three different people standing in their yard, you know, in someone's yard with their phone trying to get video of whatever they think might appear in a window. But
of course, yeah.
A lot of the public buildings, there are places, there's well-known stories. Webster University has a ghost that's been seen in that building for a long time at Loretto Hall. And actually our two theaters here in Webster, the Loretto Hilton Repertory Theater, the Rep, they have ghosts there, as well as the Theater Guild of Webster Groves. The Guild building has all sorts of stories. It's a much older building, goes back to the turn of the 20th century, and they have a lot of things that people said they've experienced there. The Great Circle, which used to be Edgewood, they have ghosts on the grounds there as well. So, there's a lot going on here.
Well, the people that have told you these stories, obviously we're not going to name them, but did they have anything in common? Is there a common denominator, common profile to the people that told you their stories?
You know, that's interesting because I didn't really see that. I was wondering if I would see some patterns, but all of the accounts I had were all very, very different in terms of the house, in terms of the experience that people had, in terms of the people themselves. They were you know, very different people in a lot of ways. I think the only thing that seemed kind of consistent were people being a little bit hesitant. I think they like to tell their story because they want to be heard and they want to be believed. And then there's always a sense of, people are going to think they're crazy or people are going to think they're making it up. But the thing, actually, the only thing I would say that I found kind of surprising was that none of it, with all the stuff you hear in all the various spooky stories and the awful things, people might get kind of frightened by things, but it's more because they weren't expecting it. It's more the being surprised or being something out of the ordinary. I haven't heard any stories so far about anything that seems dark or malevolent or frightening or something that's there to scare you or do harm to you. So I guess in that respect, that's the consistency, is that nothing really seemed hurtful or negative.
Speaking of stories, is there one particular story from your book that really seems to pique the interest for most audiences?
Actually, the one that most people kind of find interesting is about the Loretto Hilton. They have two ghosts of Loretto Hilton. One is the spirits of, reportedly, of a construction worker who was killed in an accident when the building was being put up. The stories connected with him are kind of the standard things, you know, dark figures at the end of a hall when no one else is supposed to be in the building with you, footsteps where, again, we're all over here. Why are we hearing footsteps over at that end of the room? Doors slamming, that sort of thing. Pretty standard stuff. The one that's a little more interesting and a little bit more different than that a lot of people seem to react to has to do with a man named David Hitzer, who was a backstage guy. He worked in St. Louis, for instance, at the Muni. He worked with their stage crew there. I got these stories from Peter Sargent, who is the man of everything theater at Webster. And when I started researching these things and talking to people, like the thing I kept hearing over and over again was, go talk to Peter. He knows all the stories. And when I talked to Peter, he said, well, yeah, maybe not all the stories, but he knows a lot of them. And he told me about how this was around 1980, 81. They were working on a production of Tartuffe at the Rep. And they had a group at the time that they called the Backstage Crew, a group of students, a backstage club, excuse me, that were a group of students that their job was to work this kind of backstage stuff, learn how that job is done so that they could move into that as a career if that was the kind of thing they were looking at pursuing. David was a theater professional here in town and, again, was working at the Muni, handling all those kind of stage and set sort of things that someone in his job does. He had just finished summer strike for the Muni, getting everything torn down and put away for the season, drove back out to work with his backstage club at the Rep, and got in with his kids, and he said, okay, guys, I am beat. Let's get things started. And he gave everybody assignments. I want you two to go do this. I need you three to go handle that. I need you two to go run this stuff down and bring it back. And he told them all. He says, I'm beat. I've been doing strike all day. I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to take a nap. It should take you guys about an hour to get this stuff done. Come back here. If you don't see me, I'll be over there. Come wake me up, and we'll get going on the next set of stuff we have to do for tonight. So they all said okay and scattered to do the things they needed to do. About an hour later, they come back. They all look at one another. Okay, where's David? Well, he said he'd be over there. So they go over, find him. They go to wake him up, and he doesn't wake up. He's passed away in his sleep right there in the theater that that very evening. So since that happened, they have two things that go on, let's say, consistently. I won't say all the time or even regularly, but it does happen. It does happen from time to time. The first thing is that the lighting, when people are done with rehearsal for the night and they lock up.
Hey, Patrick, we're gonna take a little break. Yeah. We have some static the line, and we'll try to clear that up. We'll take a short break and be back with Patrick Dorsey, who wrote the book Haunted Webster Groves, with more great stories here on Overnight America on KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
We're back with Patrick Dorsey, author of Haunted Webster Groves. We had a little technical difficulty there with some static on the line, Patrick, but you're back. Clear.
Yes.
We can hear you. And finish your story. I'm sorry to leave our listeners on such a cliffhanger.
Yeah, evidently some force didn't want us telling the story on the air. So, yes, so since David passed away in the theater, they've had two things that that happen, that occur every now and again. The first is when the place is locked up for the night, when rehearsals are over, and the group putting on the production comes back to get started again, they'll turn the lighting back on stage, and they'll realize it's not the same as it was when they left. Like your instinct would say, well, someone bumped into it, someone has monkeyed with it while we're gone or something. But whenever this happens, and that's kind of the weird part of it, is they'll start to put everything back, and the lighting director or just the director will stop and say, no, wait. This is better. This is solving the problems we were trying to figure out in terms of getting, this shadow filled in or something like that. So it's not just that the light's changing while people are gone. It's that it's being adjusted and fixed while no one's there. So That's the first thing they have going on. The second thing that's gone on, and it's happened three times that I've been told about. I actually had the name of one of the people that it happened to, and unfortunately I've yet to be able to catch him and get an interview with him about that. But students who are working up on the catwalks for a production, they'll do what young people are, often do. They'll be trying to adjust something, leaning over the rail, and rather than shift and move down a couple of feet or, you know, get lower or something like that, they'll try to lean over the rail a bit more to reach for something, and they start to fall off, lose their balance, and start tipping the other way. And on each of these three occasions, when a student's been about to fall off of the catwalk, they've felt somebody grab them and pull them back onto the catwalk. Two of them, I believe, had said they felt someone kind of grab them on the shoulder, by the shirt. The one, and that was the person I was trying to talk to, had reported that he very clearly felt someone grab him by the belt and yank him back as he started to go over the rail. And he even turned around expecting, he was surprised. He was expecting to see somebody there, and he wasn't sure who was up on there because he thought he was working alone. And he turns around, and there isn't anyone there. And Peter, the way he tells the story, as surely as you would tell someone, yeah, I'm on the phone with Pat Dorsey right now, he says, that's David. And that David loved the theater, he loved working with these kids, and he wasn't going to let something like being dead keep him from doing the things that he loved and meant something to him in his life. So that's one of the stories that people seem to really appreciate, and I think it's because it's not your typical, you know, walls bleeding and get out of the house kind of a haunting experience.
Patrick, you've been at this for a long time. I mean, you've done a lot of research. Why do you think people want to tell you their stories about hauntings?
I kind of started that a little bit when we talked about the, you know, when I got started on the project. I think people want to be heard. I think it's something they experience and they don't fully understand, but it has an effect on people sometimes. I mean, they'll be very halting as they tell it to me. They're very uncertain because they think people will think that they're crazy, or they just got some sort of, at the very least, some sort of perception problem. But, it's something that they know is very real, and they feel very, when I'd listen to them, they were very sincere when they would tell their stories. And I think they want to be heard, and they want somebody to hear them that, you know, doesn't judge them for it or say, you know, you're crazy. And no one's told me anything. I guess it depends on what you define as crazy, but I believe them, and it's, you know, no one seemed disingenuous with me or anything. So I think they just want to be heard.
Have people told you that they had ghosts and then the ghosts went away? I mean, do you ever hear that?
I have. When I wanted to talk to the owners of the famous Plant Avenue house, which arguably between that and the Lemp Mansion are probably the two most famous haunted houses in St. Louis, when I originally reached out to the owner of the house, his response was, I said, I'd really like to interview you about this. And his response was, we've been telling these stories for decades now, and I don't know if we really want to tell them anymore. And I kind of understood that. And as I'm reading his email back to me, he says, the line that caught my attention was when he said, and besides, the activities really died down over the years, and I have some theories about that. And, there's really not much to tell anymore. And I immediately wrote back to him, and I said, I would love to hear that. I would love to hear what your experience is of the activity going away, and I would love to hear your theory about that, because that's a completely different thing. I mean, I can either go to a house and hear one more story about strange footfalls on the staircase, or I can go talk to someone who's lived in a house for decades where he's had experience, and it's died down and been reduced over time, and he thinks he knows why. So that was very definitely one of the stories I did get to investigate and talk with the owner about.
You know, you talked early on when we first started this conversation that you became interested in the paranormal world at a very early age. And I'm just wondering, what sparked that, and have you had any frightening experiences with the paranormal in your own life?
What sparked it was just, here's a shout out for all the school librarians. It was a book in my school library. I can still remember it, called Haunted Houses by a man named Larry Kettelkamp. And it was a book of like a lot of these things, like Hans Holzer, who brought the Plant Avenue house to everyone's attention back in the early 70s. But it was a book that told all these true experiences and had some of these very famous ghost photos, the brown lady photo and the the Tulip Staircase photo and some of these other ones like that. And it was sitting on an end cap probably about this time of year in my school library. And I remember walking past that and just being struck by this ghost photo on the cover and picking the book up and seeing these things. And it just set my interest and my imagination on fire with what you can take pictures of things like that. These are things that are actually real enough that this can happen. And, I was about in second grade when I found that book. So that got me interested. And then I went looking for more books and more books and more books after that.
But to the question of, have you personally had any frightening experiences with the paranormal?
I wouldn't call them frightening. I have had, let's just say, unexplained experiences. The one I did include at the very end of Haunted Webster Groves was many years ago, when it was just my wife and me in the house. And I remember very clearly one morning, she used to get up. She still does, actually, but she used to get up before me. She'd leave for work earlier than I do. And so I'd be in bed by myself for a while in the mornings. And I can remember waking up to feeling someone sit down. I assumed it was her sit down on the bed next to me. And I was waiting for her to say, you know, bye, see you later, you know, kiss me on the forehead or something like that. And it kind of struck me, like, why isn't she saying anything or doing anything? And then as I'm starting to realize what's going on with this, I hear her coming up the stairs, which was confusing. And at that point, I'm thinking, wait a minute, if she's, you know, because it's still first thing in the morning. I was like, well, wait a minute, she's coming up the stairs. What am I feeling on the bed? And at that point, the door opened, and I remember very distinctly, you know, the light from the hall comes in, and I remember very, very distinctly feeling just this as you would if you're sitting in the bed, feeling that pressure come off the bed, like whoever was on the bed stood up suddenly. And I remember sitting up and looking around to see who else was in the room, and it was just her, and she leans in and says, I'll see you later. And I was just sitting up in bed confused as to what had just happened. And I've had people tell me, well, you know, you were asleep and dreaming, and I can maybe say that initial, I can at least concede maybe when I had that initial pressure on the bed, maybe I was dreaming, but after that I was awake. You know, when I heard her come up the stairs, I was awake. When the door opened, I was awake. So, and then over the years, it hasn't happened in a long time. Every now and again, in the mornings, I would feel a pressure on the other side of the bed. You know, that way when someone sits on the bed when you're sleeping, how you kind of roll that way as the bed sinks from their weight. Now, it hasn't happened in a long time, and it was very sporadic, but that's the most I can say I've really had in terms of an unexplainable experience like that.
Thank you for sharing that. Patrick, we've got just a few seconds left. Where can people buy a copy or find a copy of Haunted Webster Groves?
Oh, sure. Any of the stores, the bookstores in the Webster Groves area, whether you want the Novel Neighbor, the Bookhouse, Webster Groves Bookshop, they all carry it. They're all very supportive of local authors and local publishers, and they keep copies of it in stock because it is a local interest thing around here.
Patrick Dorsey, author of Haunted Webster Groves, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.